What up, fam? It's Alan Thomas, your Nubian scribe. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 3, entitled The Real Black Jocks. But before I get into this episode, I want to encourage you to subscribe to this podcast. And if you want to support it, I encourage you to click on a link in my Instagram profile, which can be found at Nubian_scribe. It would take you to the About page on my YouTube channel. Just scroll down and there you will see links to buy and support this podcast by purchasing gear, artwork, and books written by yours truly. In fact, I just released a new book entitled Power of One, A Woman's Road to Redemption. By subscribing to this podcast, you can be assured that you won't miss out on new episodes being posted, such as this one. Next episode will be a doozy. I promise you that. I'm going to be speaking about why we, as black folks, keep getting blamed for other people's misfortune. Now, I'm going to go very deep into this episode. And I hope Tyler Perry or Spike Lee will pick up on the topic and make a movie about the gentlemen that I will be discussing, who are the real black jocks. So, let me tell you who they're not. They're not Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, or Patrick Mahomes. Hold up. Wait a minute. Let me put some facts into what I just said. Bam. Peep this. Although two of those guys are already billionaire athletes, and the other one is well on his way to becoming one, they don't have anything on Jimmy Wakefield or on Isaac Murphy. Okay. You don't know who they are. I got you. That's why I'm the Nubian scribe. Better yet, let me tell you how someone outside of the family described one of them, specifically Jimmy Wakefield. And I'm purposely not mentioning that person's name because, frankly, he just ain't worth it. Plus, you already know that it wasn't positive. So why give him the spotlight a second time? Here's what he wrote to a Louisville, Kentucky newspaper back in 1903. The Negro, left to himself, has little desire to figure in the more complex conditions of life. Happy at times, indolent, shiftless, relying more on his white employer than upon his own efforts. Now, listen to how a Louisville, Kentucky newspaper is attributed describing that brother after he won his first race as a little chocolate colored Negro. But wait, listen to how that same newspaper is attributed to describing him after he won his second race as black as an ace of spades. Ouch. As if chocolate color wasn't descriptive enough. But then, that same newspaper is also attributed to having written the following about Jimmy Wakefield, a jockey whose last 2 years of riding has won him money and reputation. Did you catch that, fam? This brother had cake. And he was famous. The race, if you hadn't already picked up on it, was the Kentucky Derby. The very first person who won the Kentucky Derby was also a black jockey. His name was Oliver Lewis. The horse trainer was also black, and his name was Ansel Williamson. Now, you know that's an old name, Ansel. So, fam, out of the 15 jockeys in that first race. 13 were black. Plus, 15 of the first 28 Kentucky Derbies were won by black jockeys. The youngest being Mr. Alonzo Clayton. And he was 15. He won that race in 1892. The second youngest person to do that was Mr. James Perkins, also a brother. He won that race in 1895. Some of you are probably saying, ain't that some shh? Nah, fam. That was some serious shh. But peep this. Mr. Isaac Murphy, a brother, won the Kentucky Derby 3 different times. Yeah, you heard me right. Uno, dos, tres, tiempo. Just in case you don't know English or don't want to believe what I just said. He won the Kentucky Derby in 1884, 1890, and in 1891. Did you get that, fam? He won it back to back, just like Jimmy Wingfield. Yes, Mr. Murphy was a bad mother. Hush your mouth. Wait, I'm just talking about horse racing. The horse Mr. Murphy rode to victory in 1891 was named Kingsman. To me, that was most fitting for a 3-time Kentucky Derby winner and for someone who had won that race back to back. But peep this. The horse Mr. Wingfield rode in 1901 when he won his first Kentucky Derby was named His Eminence. Foretelling? Absolutely. Those brothers were the true beastmasters in sports. Fam, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Mr. Willie Sims, who was the first and the only black jockey to win the illustrious Triple Crown, the Preakness, the Belmont, and the Kentucky Derby. Yep. We did the darn thing on that racetrack before Jim Crow laws. And that's why you don't see too many black jocks now doing the darn thing. Discrimination and systemic racism has played a major role in significant parts of our lives, in banking, in sports, and education. And of course, social justice. So it behooves everyone to understand that we were true heroes in horse racing before we were pushed out by discrimination and hatred just because the color of our skin. When given the same opportunity, equal opportunity to excel, we will do so, as proven by those brothers who I just spoke of. Fam, we have a very rich history in the United States and in other Euro countries. And yes, that history is continually being erased from history books in those countries and in this one. To keep our children and the children of the book patrol, that's who I call people who hating and trying to erase what they did to black people and how we succeeded in spite of their actions. Thus, this podcast, I keep it 100, I keep it real, and I keep it factually correct. Now, let others tell it, we can't even spell the word horse. Don't laugh, fam. There's folks out there who really think that we are as stupid as a rock. But, we weren't the ones out there buying actual rocks as pets. That's real talk. Look up that shh. Google My Pet Rocks. It sold over 1 million rocks. That's right. 1 million pet rocks were sold. Trust and believe, the majority of them who purchased them, they weren't us. I digress. Out of all those jockeys I mentioned, Mr. Wingfield had what most would refer to as a colorful life in that sport. This is why I suggest Tyler Perry, Spike Lee, somebody pick up this brother's story and put it on film or on TV. Peep this. The year before he won his first Kentucky Derby, Jimmy came in third place on a horse named Thrive. Foretelling? Again. Absolutely. But yeah. You know, with us, there's always a but. But after his 1903 Kentucky Derby, where he came in second place, Jimmy is rumored to have been blackballed by a major horse owner because he refused to ride that man's horse in a different race. Instead, Jimmy chose to ride another owner's horse in that same race, which obviously pissed off the other owner. But for his troubles, Jimmy got a whopping 3 G's. Now, before you go clowning that brother for riding for 3 G's, peep this. 3 G's is equivalent to a little over $101,000 today. On the real, black jocks were raking in an average of 10 G's per year, which is equivalent to over $337,000 today. Jimmy took his talents to Russia, where he balled like a mother over there, making all kinds of cake. But while in Russia doing his thing, you know, with us, there's always a but, came the Russian Revolution of 1919, which forced him to relocate so that he could continue riding horses and make that loot, and most importantly, to save his own hiney. Where did he wind up? France, where he purchased a chateau, i.e. a mini mansion. This brother also built a stable for 29 horses on his property. What does that tell you? He went over there with a lot of paper and lived like a king, like a baller and true shot caller. Mr. Wingfield was so successful that he retired from horse racing, from racing horses in the 1930s. As we like to say in the family, won't he do it? And for those who don't know what that means, we're talking about God. In addition to his wealth and mini mansion with his stables for 29 horses, that brother got married and had 2 kids. He was doing well. He was doing the darn thing until, again, with us, it's always a but or an until. I don't know what that is, but something's got to give. Because we're tired, and we're tired of being sick and tired. And we're sick and tired of being sick and tired. But anyway, I digress. Until Hitler invaded France. And you know, he wasn't too keen on black folks or Jewish people. So Jimmy eventually found his way back to the United States. And guess what kind of jobs he got when he got back home? He was relegated to work at minimal jobs in a horse trade. He went from king to servant. Fam, peep this. As time went on, Sports Illustrated invited Jimmy to the National Turf Riders Association dinner in Louisville, Kentucky in 1961. And guess what happened when he got there? Yep, he was initially denied entry. He eventually got in, but the shame and embarrassment, that had to hurt. That man lived a ripe young age of 91. And I imagine that his last words was something along the line of this. Call me your eminence, my nizzo. Or not, but he could have. He could have said it. If you want to read more about Mr. Wingfield, I encourage you to read the May 8th, 1961 Sports Illustration article entitled Around the World in 80 Years by Royal Terrell, T-E-R-R-E-L-L. Now, sisters, I hear you. What about us? Weren't we doing something in the horse business? I got you. I got you. We, as a family, had a sister by the name of Sylvia Ride Out Bishop. That's R-I-D-E-O-U-T-T. In 1954, she, again, fam, this is a collective thing, brothers and sisters representing. She became the first black woman in the United States who was certified to train thoroughbreds. Now, one thing that that letter writer failed to appreciate about us when he started talking about we were shiftless and all of that stuff, when he wrote that letter to that paper in Kentucky, this is one thing that he did not get about us. When we are left alone, we can figure out on our own without an overseer. One love.